I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man, I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man, I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man, I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa.
Good evening, Vashon Island. I am Megan Hastings, and this is the Cats and Jammer Follies on KVSH 101.9, Voice of Vashon. Today, we have with us one of my dearest friends. Her name is Aimée Cartier, and she is a psychic, an amazing mother, a writer, a great friend, an intuitive and empath teacher. Welcome to the show, Aimée.
Thanks, Meg.
Tell me a little bit about yourself and about what you're going to talk to us about. Well, she's going to read us a story that she wrote so beautifully. So,
I'm going to read you a story, yeah, for starters. And it's all about my time in the Peace Corps, which happened in 1997 was when I first entered, when I started the Peace Corps.
That was a fine year, although I have a feeling I was living a much different life in Los Angeles.
Yes, totally, than what I was doing in the sands and bush of West Africa.
Yeah, where were you exactly?
I was in Senegal.
Tell me, so when I was like, I don't know, probably still in high school, I was really curious about the Peace Corps. I remember going to, like, there was a meeting in downtown Chicago of people, they're kind of like, not recruiters, but getting younger people mm-hmm. interested in joining the organization. And I really wanted to do it. I never ended up doing it, but I was always so curious about it. Will you walk us through the process that you went through with?
Yeah.
Yeah. Please tell us about it.
So you sign up, you sign up to go, and basically they kind of look at who you are, your language. I already spoke French, and so I was sent to a country that already speaks French because I didn't have to learn French to do it. And once you have the date that you're going to leave, then you all kind of gather in DC for a few days.
About how big is the group usually?
Oh, I think it depends on the country, but Senegal is a pretty established program. I think it's probably among the beginning. So how big were we? I'm terrible at remembering numbers, but I don't know, some less than 100 probably, yeah. But significant. I would say maybe 50 to 100. I'm kind of just guessing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. That was 97, a long time ago.
That was a while ago. I remember the people, but not how many we were.
What, like, where, I mean, so many times you think of the Peace Corps and you think of, in particular, going to Africa, but it must go to, like, so many other countries.
Oh,
like,
everywhere.
All
over the world. And people's experiences are vastly different. It totally depends on where you live, each country decides what the priorities are. So it's the country themselves that says, we want people to do this.
Senegal would be like, okay,
Senegal,
we want these people coming here.
Exactly.
Concentrate on outside toilets.
These are our priorities. Yeah, exactly.
What were your priorities then? There?
I was a health volunteer, which is kind of ironic considering I'm like not a blood and things like that are not like.
Not your thing.
I'm not that person. But their priorities at the time were malaria prevention. Mm-hmm. Diarrheal diseases or prevention of it. And then vaccinations was also one of the country's priorities. So there are I was a health volunteer. There's a group of health volunteers. There's a group of there was environmental educators.
Mm-hmm. And do you get to pick it or they kind of assign you?
No, they totally assign you. In fact, at the beginning, they assigned me to Mali. And I wanted to wait and be out of college for a few months before I just left right away. I wanted to have some other experience. And so I was like, and they assigned me health again. And I think it's because in the health program, you get a counterpart that works at the local hospital. And whenever I say hospital, I think people in this country would have a completely different impression of what a hospital is than what the hospital there is.
But I'm pretty sure people have seen photos of
Yeah, it's like a concrete building, you know, yeah. Like there might be some things inside.
there might be some sick people
maybe,
inside.
Yeah, exactly. So you have a counterpart that works at the hospital, that's the director of that hospital, and they speak French, and so it's a Senegalese person, but that's why it's nice when, like, for example, I already knew French, so I was able to launch right in learning the local language of the family that I lived with.
So did you live with a family the whole time you were there? Or the same family?
Yeah, I had a super unique experience myself. Usually people live with a family and mm-hmm. you have, or at least, yeah, you live with a family in a village. And I was like the health coordinator of the Peace Corps volunteers in the area that I worked in. Mm-hmm. So I had a house that was a Peace Corps house. Like I replaced somebody there. There had been someone there before, like many, many years, this had been a house of Peace Corps volunteers. So, for example, I had a library of English books, wow. all left by previous volunteers. And the other Peace Corps volunteers...
So it would have been nice to have some comforts from home, language-wise.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so where I lived, people would come, the other Peace Corps volunteers would come into town sometimes and stay at my place, and you know, I had extra beds and things like that. But I also didn't want to just be isolated in a house by myself, because I felt like I will never learn the language, I will never know
yeah what's
these
the
people.
Point of being there,
right? And so I with my predecessor set up a village outside of the town where I lived in, where I also had a place. So most volunteers just had the hut.
It was
in
your
the
summer
village.
Home.
No, I lived there pretty much exclusively for the first year, except for when I would come into town to, like, you know, lay on a bed by myself or like do random things, have lights.
And what was
have
the
light switch?
What was the language example. That you learned?
I lived with people that were Pular Futa. So they're originally herding, mm-hmm. a herding peoples. And these ones originate really in more of the Guinea region, but mm-hmm. they just happen to live in Senegal. You know, there are some in Senegal, of course. So that's who I lived with, the Pula Futas.
All right, well, let's hear your story, Amy.
All right. I call it Coming Home to Senegal. My first year out of college, I was in the Peace Corps in West Africa, in Senegal, to be precise. In Senegal is the most western tip of Africa. So if you picture the continent of Africa in your mind, the bulge on the western, left-hand side is where Senegal is. It was such a deep time of soul searching. It was the first time in my life, there have been others now, where I really took stock. All of us were doing that, or at least my closest Peace Corps friends there were. In the midst of our new lives, we had time to examine our relationship with our families, for example. Things we had never thought of or had the time to look at before. We were ejected out of our existence in a way that allowed us to really contemplate how we had spent the first 23 years of our lives. Occasionally, homesickness would arise. We would daydream about things we loved and missed. When you're away from all the things that you've had for your whole life, it puts so much into perspective. Bright memories sparkle like jewels in the sun. Even silly ones that you hadn't thought were that great take on a whole new luster. You fantasize about the most mundane things. Like wearing sweaters. The fall months in Senegal are some of the hottest times of year because it's still the rainy season. When storms are brewing, the heat is extremely dense. It feels like swimming sometimes. The air is so thick with moisture. I remember one time getting out of the shower and sitting down to brush my long hair. It was so hot and humid that just the act of brushing my hair while seated caused sweat to literally run like a river down my legs. I used to daydream about the days back in the States when we would wear sweaters. Like that would be the thing I was pining for, wearing sweaters. Or maybe more specifically, experiencing weather that allowed me what now felt like a luxury and comfort. You wouldn't dream of putting a sweater on while you were sitting in the heat, but I remember my mind finding so much comfort, awe, and peace knowing that there was a place in the world where sweaters and people wearing them still existed. The things I took for granted in my life before the Peace Corps began to feel so foreign as I was changed and morphed by the culture and landscape around me. Sometimes just remembering they existed felt like being a dream character in a fantasy novel. I'd think about things like cold drinks with ice, or the cafeteria food at my college, or carpet, with astonishment over what I had had then without knowing it. When you leave the Peace Corps, at least when I did in 1997, or when you leave for the Peace Corps, I mean, everyone who is going to the same country as you that spends a few days together in Washington, D.C., before you leave for 3 months of in-country training. Because I had already lived abroad for a year in France when I was a junior in college, I thought Senegal would be a breeze. I remember sitting around our discussion groups during those whirlwind days in D.C. of getting shots and filling out paperwork, and realizing that my biggest worry was whether I brought too much luggage. As I think on it now, all these years later, it's a little bit like that delusion that all childless people have prior to and upon getting pregnant or embarking on the journey of parenthood. You just have no idea that everything about your life and being is going to change in ways that you literally can't even imagine. People telling you this means nothing, because they will. It just breezes past your mind because, frankly, you just have no context for it. You don't know, and you won't know until you're in it. In my case, that meant I worried I brought too much luggage, not how I was going to deal with the challenges or be reshaped by African winds, rain, heat, sun, and people in a way that would never leave me, even years after I'd forgotten that carpet is a luxury. During the first year of my service, the U.S. landed their Pathfinder on Mars, and the story was in our Peace Corps allotted Newsweek magazine subscription. My mind was captivated by that. Not really Mars itself, but how my life felt like living on another planet. I was like, hey, I have been living on Mars. Nothing is the same in the bush of Senegal. For example, in the village, you don't even eat with utensils. Together, you all squat around a large metal bowl on the dirt ground and scoop out your meal with your hands. There's an etiquette to it. It's something that, just like the people you live with, you get really adept at doing or over the course of your time there. You don't reach across the bowl to eat in front of someone else. There is a specific way that you curl your hands, gracefully moving all the food to the tips of your fingers, where you delicately eat from them. I only noticed my great skill at the breakfast, lunch, or dinner bowl because toward the end of my service, my brother came to live with me for a month. So I got to see how a Westerner looks when they are first learning to eat with their hands. When I was a year into my service, I decided to go home for the wedding of one of my best childhood girlfriends. It was a spontaneous and unplanned visit. She was getting married to her high school sweetheart. They got together for the first time at my surprise birthday party, our senior year of high school. This woman and I grew up together. I was feeling really bad for missing this big event, so as the date got closer, I rather spontaneously booked a flight home to surprise her. The wedding was lovely, but what I noticed was that most of the time I was super uncomfortable in the States. I would walk into restaurants, especially ones I had never been to, and feel uncertain what to do. Do I wait here? There's a counter. Is this the kind of place where you order at the counter, or do I sit down and wait? Is somebody going to come to me? Where do I find what I can order? It was like a total sensory overload compared to the simplicity of more than a year in the West African landscape of thatched roofs, water from a well, and zero technology, including lights. So I just had to follow the example of whoever I was with and try not to, I don't know, panic or look so ridiculous about how baffled I really was by a restaurant. It was all just so weird and overwhelming. I was in the States for close to a month, except for while on the lush carpet of my parents' living room floor or drinking cold drinks with ice cubes, I almost always felt just uncomfortable and out of place. What was the most pivotal piece for me about this trip was my return to Senegal. I remember it so vividly. In order to get back to where I lived in the southern region of Senegal, which was about a 10-hour drive from the capital of Dakar, where the airport is, I had to go to the GAR, which is the transportation center, in the middle of the night. You want to be there early, because if you can manage to be the first person to get a ticket, you get the front seat of the car, which is infinitely better than sitting in the back of a station wagon in 100-degree weather with two other full-grown adults next to you for hours on end. You also want as much of the drive as possible not to be during the hottest parts of the afternoon, hence the advantage of an early start. It was 3 a.m. in the morning / middle of the night when I arrived. Imagine a large dirt parking lot somewhere on the edges of a big city with around 100 to 200 cars in it. Most cars are station wagons, all heading to different places in Senegal and across West Africa. You had to arrive, find the car going your way, buy your ticket, and then stand around and wait for enough passengers to arrive for the car to be full. All under the minimal light of a few flickering street lamps, casting blue shadow across the whole expanse. You're basically standing around in the dark. I found my car and secured my pole position, shocking the driver who was not accustomed to a white woman who spoke his native tongue. But as I was standing there, I had my own shocking discovery. I realized that this moment was the first time in over a month that I felt truly at ease. I knew exactly what to do. I knew the language. I knew the banter and the jokes. Within the culture of the Pular Futa people that I lived with, there's a lot of good-natured teasing. You have what are called joking cousins. In Senegal, the Peace Corps volunteers are given Senegalese names by the families that they live with. I was Aissatou Diallo. The Diallos are joking cousins with the Bas. So in an affable way, you make fun of anyone who has the last name of your joking cousin, like our driver that day, Abdoulaye Ba. This cultural tradition also makes you instant best friends with a stranger who shares your last name. Like all peoples and places around the world, the Pula Futa have their own greetings. In this culture, originally made up of wandering shepherds, there's a beautiful melody to the way that they express themselves. When you greet someone, it's like a song. Tana la ton, jamtun. How are things? Peace only. The discussion moves along through a framework of standard greetings, like a winding river dotted with waving daffodils. How is your mother? Peace only. How is your father? Peace only. And your goats? Only peace. The language has its own unique sounds and expressions. There's a tutting sound that you make, for instance, if you want to pretend you don't believe what someone is saying, or to indicate that because of their last name, you know they can't be trusted. So I'm standing there, a white woman in a sea of dark Pular Futa, Wolof, Mandinkan, and other West African faces, tutting with the other passengers, about the driver, who is my joking cousin, in a language with expressions that for the first 23 years of my life, I had never heard. In the middle of the night, in the seediest place, within a 200-mile radius, I'm making up that number, but really Dakar is the biggest city in several countries. In the transportation depot, I discovered that I had a new home. Going back to the States was the best choice I ever made, and not really for the things that happened there, though I would have been devastated to miss that wedding. It allowed me to fully embrace and just love and appreciate where I was in a way that you can't ever fully do when a part of your heart also pines for something else. From that moment on, I didn't wish for sweaters or carpet or air conditioning for even a breath. When I crawled into the front seat that morning at 5 a.m., with the day lightning around me and the mosque's prayers floating from loudspeakers in the distance, just like all of the other passengers in the car, I felt that I was going home.
Amy, thank you so much for sharing that story with us. It's so beautifully written, and you really have such a great voice. It's really captivating. I can't wait to hear this recorded. I mean,
thank
like
you.
I just heard it, but I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like on the radio. I love that phrase, peace only.
Yeah. Jamtun is how they say it.
Jamtun?
Mm-hmm.
Jamtun. Wouldn't it be nice if people said that here instead of, I'm good.
So totally.
It's all about me. I'm good.
Maybe I'll just start saying
I'm tired.
It. How you doing, Amy?
Peace only. I mean, you know, it could go back since you were in the 90s, it could go stem from peace out, you know, but peace only is beautiful. Ta 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 ta. Tell me, what does that mean really?
It's just it's the tutting sound I was referencing, where it's like, you know how every place has its own. This is something that you might say if you were like, that's astonishing, or I don't believe you. In this case, it was like me with the driver, the chauffeur, him saying something and me being like, like, I don't believe a word you're saying.
That's kind of what I thought, but I just wanted to make sure that was, it's interesting that they do so much travel by station wagon and not by like buses. Do you think it's different now?
No, buses like we think of, I think are highly unlikely to be there.
Is that because of the roads?
I don't know. It's just, it seems like a lot of infrastructure and a giant thing. I don't know. Maybe there are more. I have a hard time believing that they would be there. The transportation depends on where you're going. Like, for example, the shorter distance, the crappier the car you're going to be in. Like, I remember one time going to a town that was 20 kilometers away, and the driver stopping the car one time in the middle of the road. It's a dirt road. There's nothing around, literally. And getting out of the car, opening up the hood, like milling around for a second while all of us passengers were still in the car. Then he reached down and ripped off a piece of cloth from the shirt he was wearing, tied something together, and then got back in the car.
I bet you felt really good about that.
You know, it's so funny because you get so accustomed to things. I did have this internal laughing awareness of the absolute ridiculousness of my life at that moment. But I was also like,
it's fixed.
Way to go. Cool. We don't have to walk.
We're not going to go into this in full detail, but only because I'd love for you to write the story down. But You shared a story. My husband and I are good friends with both Amy and her husband, Jason, and their children. And we were sitting around the dinner table a couple weeks ago. It was just how we got started on Amy coming in to write a story for the show. But you told a story about driving and the brakes went out. And I want you to go into full detail another time, but just encapsulate it for like a minute.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a good example of how you get used to things and then and you're like, I don't know, it all seems normal. It all seems normal at the time. The gist is we were going actually between countries from Senegal to Guinea. I was with my brother, and somewhere along the journey, the guy started grinding the gears, the chauffeur. And in this case, I didn't speak his language. He was from a different ethnic group. So my brother and I were just in the back seat, like, geez, this guy is going to kill his car. What is he doing?
Yeah, why is he grinding it like that?
We didn't realize it until many miles later when he basically ran down at the police checkpoint, when he like ran down or into the bungee cord that's across the road because he had no brakes. He was grinding the gears because somewhere along the journey, the brakes had gone out on the car.
And of course, he had no language. Well, he had his own language, but he didn't have language to share with you.
Well, to share with me, but he had language with everyone else in the car. It wasn't something that he wanted to share. Hey, everybody, guess what? We actually have no way of stopping the car.
The best part of this story, though, is that the car finally did stop. And then I guess the police came over and talked to him and this whole situation. The brakes obviously still were not working. But you guys took your chance to travel for like another X amount of kilometers, miles, without any brakes, just to get out of this situation.
Totally true. It was this reckoning moment where the police officer leaned over to me and said, "What are you doing? Why are you getting back in this car?" And I looked at him and was like, this was all in my head, but I was like, if you think I am going to get out of this car and stand in the middle of nowhere with you, power-hungry policeman, that you've got another thing coming, I am definitely getting back in this car with no brakes.
I love that story a lot. Amy, do you still talk to the people that you lived with?
I don't. I have often thought, even when I left Senegal, I thought, someday, if I ever have kids, I will go back when I have a family and when they're old enough to be able to enjoy it. So there's, you know, a lot of them don't even write. So there's no way to communicate unless I was to show up, which someday I may.
I hope that you do. And I hope that I get to go with you.
Yes. Maybe it'll just be Megan in tow.
Amy, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing these. They're beautiful stories, and I can't wait to hear more of them.
Such fun. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining. This is Cats and Jammer Follies, and I'm Megan Hastings. And please join us next week for another trip around the world.